And welcome into the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network radio program. Of course, as usual, we get to talk with Executive Director Carla Smith. And Carla, how are you doing? How is your isolation going as we are still kind of doing that, although that's opening up slowly, but how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for asking. I feel like we've been home for a really long time. I got out today and just ran one quick errand, and I felt like it had been a long time since I've been out, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting back in the swing of things.
You and the rest of us as well. We have a guest today, and I'll let you introduce him here in just a little bit. But as always, if you would, kind of tell us the overview, the reason that you have Rise Up Reno Prevention Network, what you do, how we contact you, and the purpose of the program.
Well, Rise Up Reno Prevention Network is about drug and alcohol prevention, especially for youth. We want to give kids opportunity to make good choices and just have the skills that they need to stay healthy. And, you know, making good choices is a big part of that. So we work with little kids all the way up to adults and even families at different times. We have our website is riseupreno.org, and there's resources on there for finding out about getting yourself help or helping out with your kids or just even getting along and having ideas about things to do. So we've got a lot of great resources on our Facebook and on our Twitter, Instagram, but you can get to all of that from our website. It's riseupreno.org.
And, of course, you spoke of the success of Match Day a couple weeks ago. But if folks want to give and help this program out, a lot of the money, of course, comes from public funding. But much of it and more is always needed in the private sector for us to just directly give the program money as well. How do we do that?
Well, you can always contact us and send us a check if you'd like. But there is a donation button on our website and on our Facebook. So if you go to either of those places, then that gets sent to us. We get a check from either of them every quarter. You can change your Dylan's card or your Amazon rewards, Amazon Smiles. We're on all of those, so you can give to us that way. Just a little bit of what you're purchasing will help us out as well. But we're always, you know, looking for ways to sustain programs, and some of our biggest programs are some of our most expensive. So taking care of teenagers who are hungry all the time can be expensive, but we sure enjoy putting up with them and doing projects with them. So we appreciate anything that you can do to help out.
Well, certainly a lot of folks do that. So if folks want to add you to the list, they should, you know, start donating now. It doesn't have to be a lot, but when a lot of people give a little, that certainly amounts to quite a bit and helps the program.
That's right.
Okay, so the last, oh gosh, Carla, probably what, 7 or 8 weeks, somewhere during these shows as we've been in the lockdown, we'll usually bring up the temptation while the kids are at home and maybe the parents are or even aren't working. The temptation of drugs and alcohol, even perhaps some drugs that shouldn't be in homes because they're not prescribed. You have an expert joining us today from the Reno County Health Department.
We do. We have Seth Dewey. He is a health educator for substance misuse at the health department. And he's also state chair for the Oxford Houses and is involved with Oxford Houses on a federal national level as well. And just one of the most self-aware people that I know. He's great with information and always has a bit of just bringing us up and helping us feel better about things. So I'm really excited that Seth's here today. Welcome.
Thank you, Carla.
Yeah, Seth, thank you for joining us. And why don't you give us maybe a little deeper insight into what your actual job is as a health educator with the Reno County Health Department.
Right. Well, what I do is I primarily focus on our substance misuse grants. So combating particularly the opioid epidemic. But now a lot of those grants have opened wide up and are addressing all drugs, which is definitely a good thing, as we know that this is something that most communities are facing. And the nice thing about some of these federal ones is they're actually specifically designed for rural areas. So that's my primary job with the health department, is working with these substance misuse grants.
So, Seth, it may be too early to really have any hard numbers or statistics since the pandemic's really just a few months old, but is there anything in particular that you're seeing, not only just, you know, normal households with or without children, but generally overall, what are you seeing? And then are you seeing an impact yet on our children, especially school-aged?
It's really early to tell that, but we are definitely preparing ourselves, and a lot of the organizations in our communities and on our state level are also preparing for the influx. What we're afraid of course, is the uptick of drug use and, of course, even alcohol. And not to mention the rise in the mental health crisis that's going to be coming within the next few months and lasting on for quite some time.
Carla, before I forget, maybe you and Seth could talk about you know, one aspect of this not having school and it shutting down a few months early is the negative impact that our children are not have because they're not around each other near like they would normally be. But perhaps there's also maybe a silver lining there that, you know, the temptation and peer pressure is also not there to maybe try drugs or substances that these kids really shouldn't be doing or tempting each other with.
I am really interested to see when we get to the point that we get some data from this time period. We had such a high usage of vapes, of the electronic cigarette devices, and I'm interested to see if that drops off when kids go home and they're not around each other, because I think it might. But that's kind of, you know, interesting, because other things I think will probably go up. You mentioned alcohol. I think that that's one that's more accessible when kids are home and parents don't think about it quite so much because it's legal, you know, for parents. And they, you know, just have a beer on Sunday when they watch the game or just have a glass of wine once in a while. So they don't really think that it's a danger. But if they're not around, or if they are around and they're not paying attention, kids can get into that pretty easily. And, you know, it may be just experimenting. You know, you may hear that term, oh, they're just experimenting. But that's how it starts. That's how it starts, where that is misuse, it is illegal. They do have a much higher chance of becoming addicted when they're kids than they do with when they're older. So it is definitely a concern. I think that alcohol will be a concern, and I think maybe prescription meds that are at home and easier access will be a concern as well. And of course, all drugs and alcohol are a concern when it comes to kids, but I think those are the two we may see go up, and hopefully we'll see the electronic devices go down. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, Seth, do you have any, well, frankly, we're just asking you to speculate. There's, you know, no way to guess, but what would you what would you think you'll see, Seth?
I fear that with the anxiety and the uncertainty that comes along with something like this, it will also spark boredom. So I'm just, in my opinion, no data to back this up, but I fear that we will see some of the abuse on the uptick, like I said, and especially with children too, because they have been home more. But we'll just have to wait till we see anything for hard numbers.
Right.
So Seth, as you go around and do your job and basically try and educate families and you know, community members, not that I want you to tell some stories that will scare people straight, but certainly both you and Carla have seen the impact on children and their families when either the parents have an abuse problem, meaning a chemical or alcohol, that often translate into generational usage. What's your perspective there?
Well, yeah, that does tend to be something that ends up being a familial issue, whether it's because of a genetic predisposition or it's because of something that the children just grow up seeing as the norm, and then they start mimicking their parents' behavior that they've always seen. So it definitely is a concern, of course.
So I'm going to ask you about this. Obviously, alcoholism is a real disease. So is, frankly, drug addiction. This is a pretty deep subject here, but are you genetically, predisposed to have that? And if you never are tempted and never use it, it never shows up? Or is it just something that, you have one drink or one whatever, and boy, it just something clicks, and then it's hard to ever stop.
Right, and that is something that scientists and addiction specialists are constantly doing more and more research on as far as the genetic predisposition part. And I'm not a scientist, but I can only speak from my personal experience as being a person in recovery myself. I know some people that have tried a drug or a drink and have never had a problem. But I myself, when I did that, in my young age that I did, that was it from that point on. So for me, myself personally, it was definitely something that once I started, I needed help outside of myself to stop that.
Again, you're listening to the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network radio program. We're visiting with Carla Smith, Executive Director, along with Seth Dewey, who is a health educator with the Reno County Health Department. And Carla, you'd brought up vaping and essentially nicotine delivery devices. And
right.
Maybe the two of you can talk about, you and Seth. People may not think that cigarettes and vapes and, these, I'll say, smoke or aerosol type things that get into the lungs, aren't that addictive. But my impression is they're as addictive, tobacco and nicotine, as almost anything else out there available. Would that be right?
Seth, what do you think?
I honestly don't know all the statistics to actually back that up, but it does sound like that there is an equal amount of addictive properties to the Juuls and to the vaping as well.
So, Carla, I know you're a big advocate of not having those types of things laying around.
Right.
Why don't the two of you visit about, the responsibility of parents with the kids being at home? And essentially, we're about at the time where summer was, of course, eventually going to come around, and things, I guess, will get back to normal, here in a few weeks, supposedly. But again, not leaving these things around for these kids to pick up and just try and sneak around is pretty critical.
I think that's one of the scariest things about the Juuls and other kinds of vapes is that they look pretty harmless and they are easy to find laying around. Kids pick them up like when they're walking, on a field trip or going to the fair or at a playground. So they're pretty easy to, they're small and shiny and they don't really look harmful. But if one vape or one Juul would have as much as an entire pack of cigarettes and nicotine in it. So if somebody picked that up and put it in their mouth, a little kid or otherwise, that can be pretty dangerous. You could get nicotine poisoning pretty easily. And nicotine is a poison. It's something that's used to kill bugs. So it's definitely dangerous for little kids to have those around. But I remember back in the old days when, people would say, if I caught my kid with a cigarette, I'd make him smoke a whole pack. Well, that's not going to make it better. That's with Juuls and electronic devices, I think that there's even a chance of making them more likely to get addicted faster because they are getting so much directly into their lungs, and it doesn't feel like it hurts their throat, or it doesn't feel as I don't know. I just think that it's easy and it looks okay, and people just don't think it's harmful.
Seth, why don't you talk about some things that I guess it's still somewhat controversial. I personally think marijuana is a gateway drug. For whatever reason, it may be, from the people that, providing that and the other people that are providing harder or more sinister type drugs, as I tend to call them. But what about getting started on this stuff and then the types of people that may lead you to as you try and obtain some of these chemicals and the illicit drugs. What's your perspective on that? Where you start even with a cigarette or a vape, and then marijuana is introduced, and then it again, and I may be wrong in this, may or may not lead to more harsh or dangerous drugs. What's your thought?
Right. Well, many times, as we know, that marijuana is referred to as the gateway drug. And for many, that is the case. I know for in my experience and talking with a lot of people in recovery, the common consensus is that alcohol is truly the gateway drug. And sometimes it started with cigarettes as well, tobacco products, things like that. But the real dangerous thing with marijuana, with it being an illegal substance, is you're putting yourself around people that are more likely to be doing other illegal things. So that's where you get introduced many times to the harder substances or things that you may normally not have even thought about trying when you're there trying to obtain your marijuana.
So, Seth, you know, Carla and her staff certainly works with these kids, and the high school kids will mentor the younger ones in grade school and middle school. And again, not that, we want you to tell a scary story, but I'm sure you've worked with lots of people that, they harmlessly tried something as a seventh or eighth grader or whatever grade they were in. And then 2-3 years later, the crowds they were hanging around with, doing harder stuff. And then, of course, we hear some of the criminal activity that people end up stealing things so they can buy their drugs. And, that may be a pretty harsh statement, but it is happening. And for some of these kids who think that would never happen to me, or parents who say my child would never do that, how many times can you say, well, it actually happens and I've actually seen it a lot?
It is actually one of those things, sad to say, that does become commonplace. And a lot of that is all the more reason for us as communities to step up, not only in our prevention activities like Carla and with Rise Up Reno, but also in our education and our destigmatizing approach of things, and focusing on getting people the help that they need. Because as we know, when someone's in the midst of this act of addiction and they aren't working, there is a good chance that they will be out doing other illicit activities or illegal activities to obtain money for their substances of choice. So it's just one of those things where we as a community are, especially here in Hutchinson, we're really blessed with that because we have local law enforcement and so many other local partners that come together to support prevention efforts as well as to address substance abuse as a whole.
Carla, go ahead.
One of the things that you said early on is, with people being home right now and kind of secluded, is that there's people who get bored or people who are lonely or people who just try things without even realizing that this could affect them for the rest of their lives. So I could see, maybe it starts, like you said, with tobacco products and, alcohol is pretty readily available in most homes, in a lot of homes. So, if kids do start there, then they are going to find other people who are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And pretty soon they're in that crowd. And when they're in that crowd, it is easier to get access to illegal products. But also, there's other reasons that people start. And there's, people have to, really prepare themselves. Kids have to know that they have value and that they're worthwhile and that they are smart and that they can do things. And I think this is probably a really difficult time for kids to feel good about themselves if they don't know what's going on. A lot of times when we're in confusion or uncertainty, it makes it hard to feel good about ourselves and to feel, like we don't, maybe just having that time at home and going through those changes and that uncertainty makes people more likely to try something they wouldn't try normally. And then when they do get back around friends, are they going to go back to the same friends? Are they going to go back to a crowd who's more accepting of what they're trying? I think that it's interesting to hear people talk about why they started or how they started. And mm-hmm. it almost always comes down to, I was bored. I was stressed. I, you know, didn't have anything else to do. It was no big deal. But when they're hanging out with good friends and positive people, then they do have better things to do and they do make better choices. So we're missing that for our kids right now with all of us being home and not having that interaction. But I'm sure, you know, Seth, I'm sure there's other things that you can think of that people say why they started or why they wouldn't have if they, you know, had these opportunities, maybe they would have, you know, made better choices.
Right. And to piggyback off of that, Carla, I totally agree. And it's funny, we talk about the gateway drug. The real gateway drug is typically a trauma. You know, it's what people have gone through in their past. And like you mentioned right now, Carla, the uncertainty and the things going on right now, people being out of their usual settings is really making a lot of those things that people might not have been aware of previously and bringing them to the forefront. And that could very easily push someone to try something different, to almost like a self-medicate or something like that.
Right. Seth, if you would, there's a lot of people, of course, as we're aware of, that perhaps one parent or in some household, both parents have lost their jobs. I think most people certainly want to work, but look, if the place you worked is closed down and there's nothing to do, and Carla had mentioned stress, well, that's just another layer of stress on the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's definitely one of those times where we're seeing a lot of these things that are trauma triggers that would definitely set off alarms in any one of us, you know, when we have those times of extreme stress, extreme change, or extreme pressure like this, that would definitely could definitely cause someone to try something they wouldn't normally, or for someone who has in the past and went down the path of recovery to, sad to say, go back to that.
Hey, we just have about two minutes or a little bit longer than that left, and Carla, I had somebody, this has been months and months ago, we were talking about the cost of programs like Rise Up Reno and other preventative type organizations, and they did not see quite or understand the value and the return on investment for actually preventing these problems from occurring. So maybe you and Seth, as we close out the show, could talk about how, regardless of the organization, if prevention is so much more cost efficient, money efficient,
right,
than actually treating the problem once it's arises.
Right. People who get into illegal use of drugs or alcohol are definitely more likely to get involved in crime. And when that happens, then the police are involved, and then the court system's involved, and then their jobs are involved, and then, you know, rehab might be an option. And there's a lot of people who get involved who have to, help this person through the situation. And a lot of them are good people and they want to be there. But the less people we have going through that gateway, going into that, tunnel, the more productive society is. So kids who never start using, they go on to get the education that they're looking for. They get the jobs that they want. They don't have to miss work because of drug and alcohol issues, or usually even because of their kids, because they're going to keep their kids on the straight and narrow as well. But when we spend a dollar on prevention, it does save. Data shows that it saves $20 in treatment, court, police, all of the other things that come after.
And we're essentially out of time. Seth, if folks want to reach you at the health department, what's a good number for you?
Actually, they could just always call my cell phone even, which is 620-513-6168.
All right. And Carla, thanks so much for your time. Boy, that time goes very quickly. We'll do it again next week. And thanks so much for your time, Carla and Seth.
All right. Thank you, John.
Yep. And we thank everybody out there for listening to the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network radio show. We'll see you here next weekend.